I'm Shelley Schlender. This is part two of the Heart Attack Chronicles, and this is a song called You and Me Again by local clarinetist Dexter Payne. Dexter's going to tell a story today about heart disease. It's from 20 years ago. It involves another musician, a true love and a lost love, named Judy Roderick.
She was a tiny person with a huge voice. It was like, how does that voice come out of that little body?
Judy was also someone who had diabetes and heart disease.
When you have diabetes, they don't tell you it's going to kill you. They tell you that they can control diabetes. And then when you die, they say, oh, you died from complications of diabetes.
In the U.S., as Dexter says, heart disease is the leading killer listed on death certificates. But often, other illnesses lead up to it. And one of the main ones is diabetes, especially the kind of diabetes that's linked with getting obese. People gain more and more weight. They say they feel tired. They crave carbs and sweets. And then one day the doctor says their blood sugars are too high. That's called type 2 diabetes. It's a condition that most health experts say you can control with a healthy diet and lots of exercise. They often add that most people won't eat right and exercise, and so they need medications. We'll talk with some health experts who challenge that idea and what they say can reverse the condition. But first, from Dexter, what music does he say speaks the most to him about a healthy heart?
I mean, we've all heard recordings, you know, the swish, the shh. I don't really hear my heart that way. But
how do you hear your heart?
Well, if I'm really quiet, I can hear it go bum bum, bum bum, bum bum, bum bum, like that.
As for the music of a healthy heart, he says it'd be steady and mellow.
And I hope you're going to edit this.
Oh, I always do.
I thought about the bass clarinet. It has a really warm sound to me. Makes me think of what a heart should sound like. It's an amazing thing. Your heart just keeps beating. Isn't that the basis for optimism? I guess if your heart's not beating, then things aren't in our way of talking about things aren't very optimistic. As long as your heart's beating, at least you have a start. Or at least you have a heart.
Do you want to share that story about personal experience with heart disease?
Well,
you don't have to, but if you want to.
My first partner was, my partner for 16 years was a person whom a lot of people around here still remember, Judy Roderick. She was a singer who lived part of her life in Boulder. And many years ago, there was a band called 60 Million Buffalo, which is actually where we first met. Judy was classified as a type 1 diabetic. She had diabetes from the time she was 19. When you have diabetes, they don't tell you it's going to kill you. They tell you that they can control diabetes. And then when you die, they say, oh, you died from complications of diabetes. Which is, you know, everybody has their terminology, and that's theirs. But Judy died from heart failure. After 30 years with diabetes, she was definitely having complications of diabetes. And a few years prior to that, she had had an experience where she found herself exhausted and short of breath, and her legs were swelling up, and we went to the doctor, and they said, you've had a silent heart attack, which means you've had infarction, I think, isn't that the word they use? You've had a heart attack, but you didn't know it. And so you end up with the results, all the results that we know as congestive heart failure and the damage to the heart muscle, but you didn't have a, you know, fall to the floor, grab your chest, pain in your arm, call the medics, go to the hospital kind of thing. It just happened one day. And so we lived for 4 years with the result of that and the ongoing development of that.
Okay, so she had a heart attack where probably some kind of blood clot formed and killed some of her heart muscle and weakened her heart enough that it never quite recovered.
I think that's accurate, yes.
Type 1 diabetes is different from the more common kind of diabetes called type 2. A type 2 diabetic is often someone who's older and overweight. A type 1 diabetic is generally younger and often thin, which Dexter says was true for 19-year-old Judy when she got diabetes.
She was a tiny person with a huge voice. It's like, how does that voice come out of that little body?
Please don't talk about it when I'm gone.
That's the late Judy Roderick singing the song, When I'm Gone.
Don't you say a word, folks.
Before we go back to Dexter Payne's story about Judy, let's put this in the context of your own health and your heart. First, you're probably not going to get type 1 diabetes. The incidence of type 1 is on the rise, but it's still uncommon. As for how it happens, the body's immune system gets messed up and attacks its own cells, shutting off the production of a hormone called insulin. Sugar and everything from sodas to bread and brown rice is a key food that insulin handles. When type 1 diabetes shuts down insulin production, your body has trouble tucking sugar away, so blood sugars go up. Sugars can go so high, they turn into syrup in the bloodstream, which is fatal. Long before that, the sugars are doing damage. Type 1 usually gets diagnosed when someone's thirsty and craving sugar all the time, and someone finally checks their blood sugar and finds it sky high and puts them in the hospital. Dexter says that's basically what happened to Judy.
Yeah, she was incredibly sick, and they didn't know what was going on in the early 60s, 60 or 61. And she, for whatever reason, had gone to doctors that were trying to find an end run or whatever, but they didn't diagnose her as diabetic. Her parents finally got her a ticket home, and she went home, and her doctor said, "Have you been checked for diabetes?" She said no. And at the time, it was a great relief to her because, it was a great relief to find out she could take insulin and actually feel normal again.
To stay alive, a type 1 diabetic injects insulin and works hard to keep blood sugars at a normal level. Some people do this successfully for a long, healthy life. But it's easy to get a little off on how much insulin to inject, what to eat, and stress and so on. So type 1's blood sugars can end up dramatically high or low. This kind of thing happened a lot to Judy. It probably led to her serious side effect of a silent heart attack and then more. Here's Dexter Payne.
So they offered her the typical heart medications, blood pressure and whatever heart regulating medications, four or five of them. And she... Of course, they put her on them in the hospital. She went and had an angiogram. They put her on the medications, and she felt absolutely weird. So she stopped taking them, and she tried them one at a time. One kept her awake all night. One kept her asleep all day, and so on and so forth. And we were actually living in Montana at the time, but we went to another fellow that people around here will remember. Tim Binder was a chiropractor and a very talented acupuncturist and wacky healer here in Boulder. I say wacky very affectionately. Tim is an incredibly talented guy. And he just happened to move to the same town that we lived in Montana. And he helped her find natural remedies that basically did the same things that the heart meds did. And she took those for 4 years. But in the end, it was a heart attack that she died from.
It was another heart attack.
Yeah.
Please don't talk about it when I'm gone.
That's the late Judy Roderick singing the song, When I'm Gone. What happened to Judy is somewhat rare. Only 3 in every 100 people end up with type 1 diabetes. But you're not off the hook, because the other kind of diabetes is much more common. It's called type 2. Like the type 1 diabetes that Judy Roderick had, being a type 2 diabetic dramatically increases the risk of cardiovascular disease. Of course, it's not the only risk factor. Front Range Preventative Imaging Dr. Bill Blanchette points out that many other diseases can increase the risk as well.
Rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, if you have either one of those disorders, your risk of heart disease is increased to the same extent that if you had diabetes. So there are major risk factors, 3 times the risk for heart disease if you have inflammatory arthritis, rheumatoid, or psoriatic.
Dr. Blanchette points out that so can stress. But he, too, agrees that diabetes is one of the big risk factors.
So if you have high blood pressure, you smoke, you have diabetes, and you have elevated cholesterol, yes, you are at higher risk than someone who doesn't.
The American Diabetes Association reports that compared to people who are diabetes-free, type 2 diabetics are 2 to 4 times more likely to end up having a heart attack or stroke. But most people don't recognize that they could be at risk. The American Diabetes Association estimates that 7 million Americans have diabetes but don't even know it. And nearly 70 million already have risk factors that, if they're not reversed, predict that in the years ahead, they'll become diabetic. That's why a growing number of doctors check for this condition. They include Denver's diet doctor, a medical doctor named Jeff Gerber, in his office with a client right now doing tests.
Okay, here's a little stick. Good job. No, this isn't so bad.
The hemoglobin A1C is a better measure than a simple finger prick for your blood sugar just in the very moment. Blood sugars can vary a lot during a day. In contrast, the hemoglobin A1C shows your average blood sugar level over a 3-month time period. So it gives a much bigger picture.
Well, so it's interesting about the A1C test is they now recommend it as a screening test for prediabetes.
It's an inexpensive test you can ask for at your doctor's office, or you can buy a kit online or at a store like Target or Rite Aid. But simple measures like this are ones that people often overlook until they're in serious trouble with diabetes. That's what happened to Boulder social worker Barry Erdman, who, like Dexter Payne, is a musician. Barry's a drummer. He's played in a band with Sam Fuqua, KGNU station manager. Here's a ringtone from their band. Back to diabetes. One day, a few years back, Barry mentioned to an eye doctor that he might need glasses because his eyesight was getting fuzzy.
I was kind of ignorant. I had no information at all. I didn't really understand what diabetes was. But I would sit in my office every day, and there was a digital wall clock, and I started realizing that it was blurry. I couldn't actually see the time anymore across the room. So I thought, well, it's just time for my eye exam. I need to get stronger glasses.
Did you have anything else going on? Were you up at night urinating, or were you feeling extra tired or extra thirsty, or were you hungry for sweets?
I was drinking a lot of water and going to the bathroom a lot, but that didn't catch my attention. I didn't think much of it. The eye doctor on the phone is asking me what the symptoms were, and I explained the going to the bathroom, and she said, you ought to go get a blood sugar test.
And so you went to the doctor's office, and they pricked your finger, or they took a blood draw. How high were your blood sugars?
550.
What is a normal blood sugar?
Below 100 would be nice.
So your blood sugars were 5 times higher than they're supposed to be.
My physician friend and some other people talked me into going to the ER. They took my blood sugar there. It was 625.
6 times higher than it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Still, I didn't understand what that number was. I don't think anyone really knows what the numbers mean unless they have a reference range or they know someone who's diabetic and understand what that's all about.
But that kind of high blood sugar, that can kill people that high.
I suppose so, yeah. 3:30 in the morning, the nurse is asking me lots of interesting questions, like, do I have a last will and testament, and who's the next of kin? And I thought, this is crazy. I'm just here because my eyes are blurry.
After Barry nearly died of a high blood sugar, he says he worked with Boulder endocrinologist Mel Sternholm, who recommended that Barry reduce his intake of carbohydrates.
He had a reasonable plan. He said, just begin eliminating anything that starts with the letter P. Potatoes, peas, pizza. He spelled bread with a P. He said, to do better, you need to eliminate the carbohydrates.
Goodbye pasta.
Goodbye pasta, right? Rice and pasta and bread is something you would never think of being unhealthy.
The American Diabetes Association says that people are fine eating those in kind of half quantities, meaning not as much as before, but they can still eat them. Do you believe that anymore?
I believe that that's what they tell people. For myself, I've learned quickly that it's better not to eat any of that and to eliminate that completely. I feel fine being able to recommend to other diabetics that the best way to stay healthy is to avoid carbohydrates at all costs.
It's a recommendation from a growing number of doctors for the treatment of diabetes. They include Denver's diet doctor, Jeff Gerber.
We avoid carbohydrates because of how they wreak havoc on metabolism. So now we're going to switch over to the good low glycemic foods. And they tend to be the foods that have proteins, fats, and fiber. And we call them real foods. All the animal proteins like beef, chicken, fish, pork, those are good low glycemic food choices. Green leafy vegetables, so kale, spinach, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, asparagus. Difference is you get to put things like butter and coconut oil to make them caloric dense. And that's good for us, okay? Occasionally we say it's okay to eat fibrous fruits like berries. However, when you have high blood sugars and weight issues, you probably want to be very careful even with any fruits, even the berries. So nuts and cheese make good snacks. You have to watch cheese because it can have some carbohydrates in it. So the harder the cheese, the better. Again, cream is fine. Eggs.
Another expert who believes we need fewer carbs and more fats in our diet is California's Ron Krause, a longtime science researcher in the field of health and diet, whose groundbreaking studies of cholesterol and inflammation are widely respected on both sides of the diet debate. Krause says that he started his studies many, many years ago, believing that eating fat caused more diabetes and heart disease than keeping it down. His studies have shown otherwise.
In fact, for me, the most important advances, and the most interesting ones certainly, are the ones that come out with opposite results from what you started with, where you expected one result and the results came out differently. And that came out when we first studied lower fat diets, thinking that this would benefit the individuals who had higher heart disease risk, who had what we found, to our surprise initially, was that when we fed these low-fat diets and substituted carbohydrate, which was at that time and still remains the current paradigm, we really didn't achieve what we had wanted to achieve by putting them on this higher carbohydrate diet. So we elicited what we think now is an underlying genetic susceptibility, which is very common in the population.
Bad news. It was like giving them this supposedly healthier diet that made them be more at risk.
Yeah, and we were certainly concerned about these changes increasing heart disease risk. So we turned our attention ultimately away from feeding higher carbohydrate, lower fat diets to doing the reverse, to really lowering carbohydrate. And that's where we intersected with the world of people that were very interested in very low carbohydrate diet.
Ron Krause is a fan of olive oil. And in many cases, he says that saturated fats are safer for people than vegetable oils, such as corn oil and safflower oil and soy oil, which are all high in omega-6 fatty acids. Ron Krause and a number of other health experts have been saying things like this for years. Nevertheless, oils high in omega-6 fatty acids have been labeled as healthier than saturated fats by many public institutions, including the American Heart Association and the USDA School Lunch Program. Here's Ron Krause.
And we compared different levels of carbohydrate, keeping in one case fat constant and in the other loading it up with saturated fat. And what we found is that the carbohydrate reduction alone improved the metabolic profile in the majority of individuals independently of saturated fat intake.
Now, was that the 2006 American Journal of Clinical Nutrition study? You had a range of carbohydrates that people ate from 54% of their calories as carbohydrates to 26% of their calories as carbohydrates.
That's right. We had actually three levels. The low was 26, the high was 54, and then we had 39% in between.
And in some of those people, you fed them 8% of their calories as saturated fat, and in some you fed them 15%.
On the lowest carbohydrate diet, the 26% carbohydrate, we jacked up the fat content with either monounsaturated or saturated fat. That is an olive oil type of fat versus, in this case, high dairy fat.
And you didn't see much difference in what happened to them in terms of the fat. There was more difference based on how much carbohydrate they were eating.
Yes, and the improvement was clearly due to the carbohydrates.
Meaning lowering the carbohydrates generally made the improvement.
That's right. The improvement was clearly due to reducing carbohydrates.
Saying saturated fats are bad may change sometime soon, thanks to a new study published in the British Medical Journal, which shows that eating lots of omega-6 fatty acids may be associated with a higher risk of early death from any cause, including increased risk of heart disease. Even Time magazine is reporting on this and saying the evidence may finally convince the American Heart Association to change its stance on saturated fats. Now, many health experts and diabetics prefer a higher number of carbs in their diet. In fact, that's the main recommendation that people get in their doctor's offices today. And for many people, that choice of a lower-fat, higher-carb diet seems to work. And it's a choice that many prefer in contrast to an Atkins-style diet, which in the 1980s, when Judy Roderick was struggling with heart disease and diabetes, was often touted as a high-protein diet. In Judy's case, protein wasn't something that her kidneys could handle. Dexter Payne.
Well, there were contradictory recommendations. The standard nutritional thing was the fad now, the Atkins kind of high protein kind of thing.
The authors of the new revised Atkins diet books have made a point of saying that they recommend much less protein today and what else? More fat. Dexter Payne says that in Judy Roderick's case,
the recommendation that we followed, the alternative recommendation at the time was high complex carbohydrate diet. Obviously, it's not as hard on your kidneys because they don't have to filter out the byproducts of protein digestion, the creatinine and all that. It was an interesting journey. I came out of it with a much greater respect for the medical establishment, but also with a stronger belief that there are other ways to address health issues, that there are energetic ways, emotional, you know, all our entire being is all wrapped up in itself. And to pretend that you can just address these things physically is a really sad mistake, I think. Because it seems to me that you can do things that the doctors don't have explanations for. We term them miracles. And really what it is just addressing our whole being and addressing our emotional and energetic psychic self, as well as our taking care of our physical well-being.
In the final years and months of her life, Dexter Payne says that some of the best advice Judy Roderick got came from an endocrinologist.
You know, endocrinologists are great because endocrinologists know that they don't know everything, as opposed to some doctors who aren't aware of that.
They're intellectually curious.
They're very interesting people.
Yeah,
we had an incredible endocrinologist towards the end, and she was like, whatever we wanted to do, if we wanted to do visualization, she'd get us a picture. She's like, try anything. What? We don't have an answer for you. Find your own. If you feel good, you're doing the right thing. If you feel bad, if you're angry, if you're upset, if you're in despair, if you're depressed, then you need to make an adjustment.
But the final straw that killed Judy in the end may have involved some medication or at least a medical procedure.
The dye from the angiogram sort of started a process of her kidneys failing, which...
You mean that her kidneys reacted to the dye and it hurt them?
Yeah. Yeah, so really, the dye from angiogram is really noxious stuff. We didn't know that until after she took it. People with diabetes in late stages often have renal failure. That's not uncommon. But it started with that angiogram, or it seemed to. And, of course, you know, when you go to Chinese medicine, if you ask which controls which, the heart and the kidneys, it's a mysterious thing. So there's so many ways to look at it all.
Yeah.
We went to a kidney doctor. He said, I'm going to get you ready for dialysis. It's the last thing she wanted. I did some reading and discovered that if your kidneys are compromised, that a low-protein diet is actually what's indicated. And we went for 4 years on a really low-protein diet. I mean, I'm not religious about it, but I kind of stayed on it. I discovered that reducing protein was a really great thing for me.
Dexter says he thinks some of what Judy suffered probably ran in her family.
She was known for her temper. She was known for her temper, and so was her father. And we decided he died he died in his 60s of heart attack and stroke. And he was known for his temper, and we decided after he died that he would typically get the angriest just before supper, you know, the classic time for an insulin reaction. So we guessed that he was probably hypoglycemic, that it was a blood sugar thing for him as well. And Judy, she would swing from the ecstatic to extremely angry.
So she was a fighter when things didn't feel right.
She was a feisty one, yes. Absolutely. No, there was no... She did not lay down for anything.
She was a bright flame.
She was. She was a tiny person with a huge voice. I mean, it was like, how does that voice come out of that little body?
And you still miss her.
I still have her. I mean, it's been a lot of years. And I'm not much for sorrow. Doesn't serve. I'm sure she's in a better place, and I'm doing great.
Judy Roderick died of a heart attack 20 years ago due to complications from diabetes when she was 50. That's it for this part two of the Heart Attack Chronicles. For an in-depth look at heart disease risk factors, you have a special opportunity this weekend. Call Front Range Preventative Imaging to reserve a spot in a free seminar that will be given by Bill Blanchette this Saturday at noon. For links to the story of Judy Roderick, or for an extended version of an interview with Barry Erdman or Dr. Ron Krause, check the hot links for today's show at kgnu.org/metro. For KGNU, I'm Shelley Schlender.